when you hop on the merry-go-round of hypocrisy and it spins you in my direction.
I will not order
and
breakfast.
I'm going to keep tabs on your Deliveroo account.
But, well, somebody needs to, certainly. Yeah.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Right. Thank you, Eve.
Can I just get the prawns off my chest?
Yeah, I know you've had a traumatising experience. We do need to hear about it.
Well, it was just a bit weird, Jane. So I was coming in on the 11:05 from Dalston Junction, not Kingsland Junction. We have two tube stations.
All right, train fans.
Which is a lovely little trundle through the urban landscape.
Yes.
All the way down to Canary Wharf. And I had my headphones on and I was listening to some music very, very loud.
What were you listening to? Let's just enter your world.
Oh, okay. So I've got a playlist on the go at the moment that veers from Harry Styles to the Manic Street Preachers. Okay. And then it had a bit of Sam Fender in. And if there's anybody that Sam Fender is speaking to with his tales of hardship...
Is
on the northeast coast.
Is it you, darling?
It's a middle-aged woman in her rather plush vegan boots, hoofing it to her full-time job in a well-remunerated radio station. But anyway, I love his music, so I was listening to that. And just this very, very weird smell wafted across from a woman who was sitting opposite me. She was eating a bag.
Age?
27, 28.
Okay.
I mean, a beautiful complexion, obviously very well-nourished, well-fed, whatever woman. And she was eating a bag of defrosted prawns.
Okay, now that can't be allowed to happen.
Tube at 11:05, Jane.
That is not a mid-morning snack, is it?
It's not, but it's because of all of the protein fandango, isn't it? Because I do quite often see people just eating turkey slices from a pack.
Oh, dear.
Yep. In days of yore, we would have just had a bag of hula hoops and thanked our lucky stars.
Yes, we really would. I didn't realise that prawns are having a moment.
Well, I think they're very...
Are they really? Okay.
They're kind of... They're very low-fat, high-protein, aren't they? Yeah, so they are having a moment, but they should not be having a moment eaten out of a bag.
Do they actively smell?
Oh, my word.
I know they do. I know there's all those stories of when couples break up, it's a really good idea, although we're not endorsing it, to stitch a king prawn into a curtain.
Yeah, because when it goes off, it's just so rancid.
I mean, I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, so there's also the thing that fresh fish isn't meant to smell of fish, is it? That's how you tell if fish is fresh. Hey. But fish does smell.
Sorry. If a fish smells of fish... Don't eat it.
If it smells too fishy, it's off. Fresh fish shouldn't smell too
hence
fishy.
The expression that something's fishy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But these did whiff of prawns. There was no doubt.
I hope she's
about
all right.
It. Oh, I'm sure she's fine. I mean, she's what have we got to? We've got to 12:30, so she's probably knee deep in a bowl of ramen with some kimchi and only the egg yolk on the side, or is it the egg white? I always get those two things.
A kombucha.
Something like that. But anyway, she looked absolutely beautiful and lovely and all hail to her. Just don't do it in public. Just have that little snack, you know, before you get on the tube. Don't do it in a closed environment. It's just really unpleasant.
I agree with you, but I've got to say that sometimes if I have a theatre or an evening event and I'm coming straight from work, going straight from work, I do sometimes have to eat on the tube. I just have to occasionally have a light tortilla rap or something like that.
I'm very surprised, Jane.
No, it's horrible, and I don't like myself when I do it.
Yeah, and I mean, we've already had one tale that has absolutely repulsed me with the idea of you slovenly
last week
just wending your way home down the streets of East West Kensington, shoving a hamburger in your gob, and shoving it in. A little bit pressed, shoving it in.
It was horrible. It was horrible, and I owned up to it. That's all I'm saying about that. I still stick to the fact that the next day I deserved a hangover and I didn't have one.
So that is brilliant.
Yeah, so there you go.
But can I just ask you why, given that you're forgiving of these eating in public vulgarities, why you find it so distressing for people to have a Deliveroo delivered to their house first thing in the morning for breakfast?
I do.
Because you've got right on cop on about that.
That is absolutely my suburban Sue coming out there when I see people getting... I become my mother or grandmother. And just think, surely you could at least make your own breakfast. That's the little voice I've got shrieking in my head. I don't like the voice. I just like to admit it.
How long do you think it will be before you give in to the voice?
And go up to somebody who's getting a Gales delivered?
Just get one delivered yourself.
Oh, no, I wouldn't get... We get loads of takeaways delivered, but not at breakfast time. We've got standards. Television doesn't go on until 7 p.m. during the week.
No.
It doesn't.
When you hop on the merry-go-round of hypocrisy and it spins you in my direction...
I will not order
and
breakfast.
I'm going to keep tabs on your Deliveroo account.
Well, somebody needs to, certainly. Yeah. No, I mean, actually, it's not been... I don't even think about it. I don't want to. But sometimes I dislike the amount of takeaway food delivered to our house. It's not usually me who's responsible. And by the way, I wouldn't pick one of those ramen meals. The kids love them, but I find them so challenging to eat because I've got such poor motor skills that the whole assembly of the noodleage and the other bits and bobs in the bowl... To me, it's more of an assault course than a treat. I just can't be bothered.
I'm in full agreement with you.
Oh, right, that's a relief.
And because you seem to need much more, a much wider variety of cutlery than is ever offered to you.
Well, you know how long it takes me to eat a salad from here?
You know when you go to Wagamama and they give you that very odd spoon?
It's a ladle. I am paper, it says.
The ladle one that you have to kind of...
Oh, that, oh,
knock
God.
Back.
No.
I can't work that one at all.
Oh,
and then I want a fork for the noodles... And then I probably would drink it from the bowl. But then it does tend to run down your face, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unless you do the slurping. I can't do the slurping.
I don't think a lady would slurp. I don't think either of our mothers would want us to slurp.
No.
So we won't be doing that. This is a podcast. I don't know if anyone's still awake. We have got a really interesting guest today. Who is it, Fee?
It's Martha Lane Fox. We're going to talk to her about, got loads of things, about sitting in the House of Lords at the moment, which is a busy old place. She's also Chancellor of the Open University. She is, I think she describes herself as a tech dinosaur. She was one of the first in with lastminute.com, so she's got lots of thoughts about tech.
And she sold it at just the right time, didn't
she? Did. Yeah. She's been a director of Twitter, but she had a terrible car accident in Morocco, well over a decade ago now, and she broke 26 bones in her body, including her pelvis. She had a stroke, but she doesn't really talk about it or draw attention to it at all. And she is now in, she's doing an amazing fundraising thing, actually raising money for three charities that she's patron of, where she's walking up the UK's three highest peaks.
So that is Ben Nevis,
Scafell
Snowden.
Pike and Snowden. Yeah,
Scafell Pike.
Scafell. It's rare for me to go for a short air and for you to go for a long air.
Is it? It is Scafell Pike. Yeah.
Scafell Pike, yeah. So we're going to talk to her about all of those things in 12 minutes.
All right, well, good luck with that. Yeah. And actually, just on a serious note, there is a story in the news today, and we are going to be discussing this in our health news with Dr. Rachel Ward on the Times Radio show. So if you are able to, you can always spool back and listen to it on the Times Radio app. It'll be at about 3:15 in today, Tuesday's edition of the live radio show on Times Radio. But this is this study from The Lancet calling for bold policy actions to promote better lifestyles and reduce the incidence of breast cancer. It is the most common form of cancer in the world. I didn't know that, actually. One in four cases, though, of breast cancer in the UK are preventable, apparently, with thousands of women developing the disease every year due to low breastfeeding rates or too much alcohol, the study says. Now, that is, I think, just that sentence is quite triggering, isn't it? It's probably not good enough, to be honest.
I think it's really, really difficult. And with all of those things, you need to balance it out with other factors, don't you? Which that paragraph alone doesn't do.
Yeah.
And you also condemn an awful lot of women to a high state of anxiety who either haven't had children, have chosen not to have children, can't have children, or didn't breastfeed. And also just, you know, half of France would be dead if that was an actual fact. So we need to dig a bit deeper, don't we?
Well, we do. And there's just one email we've already had on this subject from Alex, who just says, I'm just spitting with rage at this article. So now I'm responsible for my own breast cancer, along with millions of other women, because I didn't breastfeed long enough. The article goes on to say the chance of breast cancer is reduced by a measly 4% for every 12 months. Yes, a whole 12 months a woman breastfeeds. I looked up the UK figures. 68% of women breastfeed. Only 48% continue beyond 6 to 8 weeks. Thanks to whichever man compiled these facts. Thanks for letting me rant, says Alex. He's right, there's more to this story and we hope to discuss it in more detail a little bit later on the radio show today.
Do you remember that Dr. Ellie Gannon told us last week, though, that prostate cancer is reduced having lots
regular sex? Yeah.
But I don't think that you, I don't know, would it make men feel the same way if you're not very sexy? It's on you that you've got prostate cancer.
I don't think it would ever be said.
Please go and have more sex. Please breastfeed your babies more to save your bosoms.
In defence of journalism, this is an article written by and she's great, Eleanor Haywood, who's a brilliant Times journalist. And the point of a first line or a first couple of lines in a newspaper story or article is to keep you reading. And those first two lines would keep me reading that article. So I don't want to criticise the author of the article. But I do think it's an interesting way of approaching the subject.
I don't want to dispute the facts either. But all I'm saying is just that there could be many other balancing factors involved in breast cancer. And that presumably is true. But it's the way that you express it. So, you know, you're not kind of saying it's on you if you've got cancer, which clearly it's already made one person
feel that
it would be their fault.
Yeah.
So definitely it just needs unpicking, doesn't it?
It does.
We've had so many emails about Morris dancing. Now, we didn't realise that there were so many female troops of Morris dancers, and ironically, because this all came from Jane and I saying that Morris dancing just gives us the ick. It's just a personal thing. I find it a bit creepy.
I thought it was very funny on the WhatsApp group today. You just said you shouldn't hop in adult life. There is a lot of hopping involved.
So much hopping and
one-legged behaviour.
So it just makes us feel a bit queasy, which turns out to be something that is shared by quite a lot of people too. But the irony is that loads and loads of people have sent us more pictures.
Yeah.
Of people
stop now.
Morris dancing, in order to get across the point that the lady Morris dancer is very much a thing too. So this one comes in from Marie, who says, if you want to see male and female Morris dancers in all of their splendour, this is where it's at, the Potty Festival in Sheringham in North Norfolk. I've heard of some people who are scared of clowns. I feel the same way about Morris dancers. I find them a bit sinister, although it comes across as hey, nonny, no, and benign. I'm not so sure. But a friend of ours was a part-time female Morris dancer. They would regularly turn up at rural pubs and annoy the hell out of customers who just wanted a quiet drink. She said most of it was good fun. There did seem to be quite a bit of competitive stick bashing and the women were the worst. If you had the knock with one of the dancers, it provided the perfect opportunity to lay into them under the guise of it being part of the routine. Over the last few years, the traditional Morris dancers seem to have been overshadowed by a new crowd who've gone off-piste in the clothing department. The look is more steampunk, lots of purple taffeta and lace, the odd basque has crept in, top hats with feathers and mirrored sunglasses. You know the sort of thing, or maybe you don't. It's a look which doesn't really travel well, and it's still sinister. And somebody showed us a photograph. Polly has sent a photograph of the thing that did it for her, which is, as part of the Morris Dancing Troupe, there's a guy who put a horse's head on.
Yeah, that's where I check out.
And in a park near the centre of Winchester.
Oh, I'm near the centre of Winchester.
Hello, Winchester. Last September, they passed the troupe, or is it a group, or is it a gang, or is it a herd, says Polly. Not sure of the appropriate noun. One of whom was dressed, as I believe tradition dictates, in a horse's head and proceeded to greet the children. I've been unable to shake the experience since. See photo below, which I made my five-year-old take, so I was too busy hiding behind a bush. So, Polly, we're with you on that. But lots of people are really enjoying the female Morris dancing troops.
We've got more on this, but do you like clowns? Because I don't.
No,
I don't like clowns. Who likes clowns? Somebody somewhere must like them.
I don't really like magicians either.
Oh, don't mind.
I find it very hard to be caught up in what you know is a ploy.
Yes.
Ploy for money.
Yes, that's why you're going to vote Conservative at the next election. Does that work?
Am I? Sorry, what's just happened?
Being caught up in a ploy. Scrub that, Eve. I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, I like this from Mary.
Let's just wind up the battery.
What's happened? I had an early start today. Scrub all that. This is Mary, the Morris dancer.
Yes.
So I think that indicates, I could be wrong, and I'm no detective, but I think that means she's a Morris dancer. What do you think?
I think so, Jane.
Okay. Mary says, and I love this, she says, my eldest child is actually called Morris, although this is sheer coincidence, as Morris dancing only became part of my life in the last year.
Well, you think it only became part of your life.
I think you knew all along that it was your destiny. Anyway, Mary says she's part of a border Morris troupe, which uses sticks and whooping. Well, that's all right then. Rather than the bells and hankies, that is Cotswold Morris. Did you know the difference?
No.
Border versus Cotswold. Mary's part of a troupe that dress mainly in black tatters, a sort of shaggy shirt with black top hats. We practice every Thursday during the darker months and then spend the summer attending festivals all over the place. I'm the youngest of the group at the age of 37. The oldest is 70 plus. And I love the fact that I get to spend time with people of all ages and all walks of life. We practice and perform with a full band, sometimes as many as 15 players, made up of fiddles, melodeons, whistles, guitars, drums and a French horn. There's no oboe in the band at present, so feel free to dust off your instrument and come along, Fee. Yeah. Okay. I love it, says Mary, although my partner's slightly less keen as he's on child duty when I'm prancing around at whichever local festival we're performing at, especially as my youngest is terrified of me when I'm dressed in my Morris dancing get-up. She says as well, and I like this, that... Oh, no, that's from another email, so I'll do that in a minute. Hang on a sec. I am going absolutely mad today. So cut that out as well. Especially as my youngest is terrified of me when I'm dressed in my Morris dancing get-up.
Well, I'm sorry, but that says everything.
It kind of does, Mary. We wish you the very best in your Morris dancing career. And by the way, what a wonderful thing. I wish I'd thought of this when I was both married and had small children. Why in God's name didn't I take up Morris dancing then? I've got a Morris dancing rehearsal.
I've regretted not having a deep and sincere love of Test cricket.
Yes, so you could just disappear for
5 days.
Oh, it's at Lord's. So I'll see you a week on Thursday.
Yeah, missed a trick there.
Oh, dear.
Yep. Now, look, this is from very lovely Arabella, who's having a competition with her mother to see who can get the most emails read out.
Is this about Morris dancing?
No, it's not. Did you want to carry on with the Morris
dancing? I just
want to
do just one more.
Hang on in there, Arabella. This is a slightly rocky trip we're on today, everybody, but don't worry, we'll get to harbour soon.
Just wait till I've got my freedom pass, then we really will be going all over the place. This is from Sarah, who says, my mum was a Morris dancer when I was growing up. She was in an all-female side called the Black Annies, named after a famous Leicester witch.
Ooh.
Yes, if only it was near Halloween, we could make more of this, who I believe were quite an anomaly when they started being all women, but they are still going. I would also encourage you to look up Boss Morris, an all-female and trendy Morris side who've performed with Wet Leg.
Well, that is cool.
Yeah, they were with Wet Leg at the Brit Awards. For Border Morris, I would look up Beltane Border Morris, who I always found really exciting to watch. However, you're right that many sides are men only, and there are definitely still patriarchal elements who resist change, but that's particularly short-sighted, as many Morris sides are dying off as their members age and retire. There are other problematic elements within Border, such as some traditions of disguise, but nowadays that just looks like blackface. Again, many sides are thankfully moving away from this and modernising a bit with the times. And Sarah adds a PS, I just booked a solo ticket for your show in Sheffield. Looking forward to seeing you live. Sarah, well, brilliant. Thank you so much for doing that. That's at the Crossed Wires Podcast Festival, May the 31st. You can come with a friend, you can come on your Todd. We don't mind, but we'll be there at the Crucible Theatre, 7:30 on the 31st of May.
7:15
on the 31st of May.
Lovely. We'll have a big name guest, and then in the second half, we always do questions from the audience, which is just fantastic. And I would say, really have no fear about coming on your own, because there's always a sense of sharer's table. Have you ever been to a lady spa at the weekend? There's always a sharer's table. It's where the best people are.
Is that where you congregate if you've come?
On your own.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think sometimes you look across a crowded dining room filled with people who are eating substantial amounts of salad bar while dressed in a white fluffy robe. And the people who've come, you know, with a mate or whatever are looking enviously as the cackle of laughter rises from the sharer's table.
Also, we understand as well that many of you don't want to tell anyone that you listen to Affair.
It can be embarrassing.
It's all right, we get it. That's fine.
So look, back to Arabella, who's in this competition with her mum, and she is hoping she can secure her first win. So she has done that. She is coming on her own and basically says, this is a long-winded email to ask you if you'd both like to join me for a G&T. Well, we will definitely be available for mingling afterwards. So hopefully we will meet in person. And thank you as well for everything in your email. Actually, your story of your progress through an undergraduate degree and then completing a master's afterwards was with reference to the Jeff Norcott interview, which was a while back, about whether or not it was worth going to university. And Arabella is the proud owner of over £100,000 in student debt now.
How much?
£100,000. The whole experience has left me feeling quite disappointed and really quite concerned that this amount of teaching is seen as acceptable for a healthcare profession she is hoping to head into or already is in occupational therapy. I mean, it just seems absolutely extraordinary to be saddled with that amount of student debt. And I know that occupational therapy and all of those therapeutic professions are in desperate need of people at the moment. Mm. So, God,
it's really important.
Be something that you could do to actually alleviate that debt, because who would want to take on, you know, that amount of debt? I know we're meant to call it something different, aren't we? Martin Lewis, the money-saving God, is always saying, look at it just as a kind of extra tax you're paying, but it still looks frightening when you write it down. So, yes, let's try and meet in person. And as Jane said, it would be lovely to see you at the Crucible. We'll both be wearing waistcoats. We'll be puffing the top of a queue. We will be dusting it with chalk and off we go.
I'm actually associated with I went on a school trip to the Crucible to see a play in the 1980s. I'll be able to find out what it was, but I think it might have been a Brecht play.
It probably would have been,
wouldn't it? Because it was a phenomenon. I mean, it's got such a good reputation, the theatre. And it will, I'm afraid, we won't do much to enhance its reputation by appearing. Or will we?
Well, I mean, everyone diversifies.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know whether anyone is interested in emailing this podcast about, yes, I'm going to get onto the guest in a minute. Honestly, Eve's face, she seems to think that people want a sort of less is more version of Off Air. As we both know, Fee, people want more and more, not less.
After a while, I just don't look at her.
Exactly.
Oh, you've got a pre-record.
I know I have. But I just wonder whether anyone shares my view that Liz Truss's mind-boggling lack of self-awareness, it actually makes me feel embarrassed on behalf of the sisterhood. And I'm wondering whether I'm being harder on her than I would be on a male politician who'd cocked up so magnificently. Is it because she's female that I'm just so mortified by her? I don't know.
No, I don't know either. And I sometimes, I mean, everyone has their own opinion in what they're saying, but I don't view her through the prism of gender at all.
Don't you?
No, I don't.
I want to stop doing it, but I wish... Lots of male politicians have got no self-awareness at all.
Well,
absolutely
Kwasi Kwarteng, her partner in crime, was similar. You know, he really says the same things about this extraordinary kind of... you know, blame that both of them have on organisations that seem to have served the country well in previous administrations somehow suddenly brought them down.
Brought them down. She's just on my mind because she's got this book that's come out this week, so she's doing lots and lots of interviews, and I've tried very hard to listen to quite a few of them.
Well, we were saying earlier that actually there is something akin to when you tell a child off and they're lying and they refuse to say, you know, I did it myself. And, you know, it's Robert's fault or it was Amanda's fault or I didn't do it. I wasn't there.
I didn't do nothing.
No, and it's a similar kind of tone, actually, and it is embarrassing to watch.
Becky says, I'm from the Wirral and I'm with Jane on the Central Park argument. It is based on Birkenhead Park. That's what everyone living within a five-mile radius of Birkenhead has told me since I was a child, and I am not going to Google it. I'm going to believe it's true. Thank you, Becky.
Well, it's that kind of... I wanted to say small-minded, but I won't. It is that kind of loyalty for a small community that makes the Liverpool diaspora as potent as it is.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Now, Martha Lane Fox is an entrepreneur, philanthropist, and was for a while the youngest female member of the House of Lords. She is Baroness Lane Fox of Soho. Now, we're going to talk to her about her attempt to walk to the summit of the three highest peaks in the UK in a moment, something she's doing to raise money for four charities, and which is remarkable because 20 years ago she was in a car crash in Morocco, broke 26 bones, was in hospital for 2 years, survived a stroke, and has had 47 operations since then. Welcome to the programme, Martha.
Thank you.
I did hear you, because you're on the panel, aren't you, on the breakfast show on Times Radio, because you write for the Sunday Times and, you know, you're the big brain. And I did hear you say, in a kind of self-deprecating way, when all of that was mentioned by Stig and Asma, and they were talking to you about your walking challenge, you said something like, oh, you know, get out the tiny violins for me. And I did just think, well, actually, you can kind of go with a cello on all of that. I mean, that is just that's a lot to have happened to a body. Do you simply not want people to frame you in that way, hence sweep it aside like that?
I think that I have survived the last 20 years by using denial to extreme effect. And, you know, I'm sure psychoanalysts would unpick that and say I can probably be more something or other if I had not done that, but it's worked for me. So I've tried not to put myself always in the category of disabled person, person walks with two sticks, person that's in and out of hospital. And I think it's also because I feel as though I did have this immense luck in my life. You know, not everybody gets to start a dot-com success story and make quite a lot of money and all of the things that went with that. Yes, then, followed quickly by something horrifying. But I don't you hold all those things true as a person, and I don't want to feel as I'm coming out here going, feel sorry for me, or to me, something happened 20 years
sure.
ago.
Sure. So in a sense, why do something that then does draw attention yeah. to the fact that it's 20 years since that happened to you?
You sound like Chris, my partner, who's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You just want to have a party on the top of a mountain. That might be true. I'm doing it because it's still a thing. It dominates a lot of my daily life, and just even in 2022, I had a lot of problems with my hip that then led to a bone infection that led to sepsis. I nearly lost my leg. It goes on, right? And so that is part of my life and it is part of who I am. And at 20 years, I thought, how can I channel it for me, not for everybody else, but for me, into something that felt positive? So something very scary, which this is, and also trying to raise a lot of money, felt like those things.
How are you going to do it?
Well, I'm going to do it slowly. I'm starting with Snowdon on Saturday. I've never been to Snowdon. I think the last time I went to the Brecon Beacons, I was 11 when we went on those outward bound holidays. And I remember seeing my teacher, Mrs. Pond, in her 90. That was the most exciting thing that happened.
Are you over it now?
Just. Yes. Only just, Jane, as you can tell.
It's obviously lingered.
Only just.
Poor lady.
So starting with Snowdon, and then I'm going to Scaffold Pike and then Snowdon in September. I've been training quite hard, doing lots more kind of stepping up things than I would normally do. The up bit I'm not so worried about, actually. It's the down bit, because down is harder generally and a bit more tricky with my balance and stuff. So I don't know, but I'm going to do it.
And who's doing it with you?
Some friends and family. And I have subjected my poor close friends to quite a lot over the last 20 years. And I sent an email going, I'm going to do this. You don't have to come with me. But 10 years ago, I walked Hadrian's Wall when it was the 10-year anniversary. Quite a lot of people came with me and it was amazing. And so a lot showed up, especially family. So I'm really lucky. I have about 30 people walking with me.
So you are doing it for all of those reasons, but really to raise money yes. as well for charities, three of which you are patron of. So yes. do you want to just run us quickly through the charities?
I do. They're all related to things that have made my, you know, that have made my story, I guess, different. You know, if you have what happened to me generally and you are poor, you die. Simple as that. And that's quite sobering. And if not, you're probably in a wheelchair. And I think about all the points in the chain where the resources that I had changed the moment completely. So, for example, you know, I was in an incredible hospital, John Radcliffe in Oxford, one of the most major trauma units in the country. They put me back together. I was in intensive care for a long time. I was there for a couple of months, but they couldn't quite cope with me. Even my mum and dad had to put an extra pair of eyes in the room because there was so much happening all the time. So the first charity I'm supporting, called Day One Trauma, just become patron. They work in major trauma units in hospitals, mainly in the north of England right now, and they give you an ambassador. So either as the patient or as the family of the patient, it's somebody that will help you, and it's somebody that's been through a major trauma themselves. So that can be somebody that can do something like help you work the benefits system if you're going to be in hospital for ages and ages, through to you've got 47 different experts telling you you need to prioritise your care in these ways. How do you work through that? So they're brilliant. That's the first one. Second one is called I Am the Code. They help girls in refugee camps learn to code. I went to Northern Kenya to see them recently. They're amazing. Obviously, my life changed completely because of digital technologies, so I feel very strongly about that. The third one is AbilityNet. They are kind of the country's leading technology company that helps disabled people use technology, which is obviously transformational if you're stuck at home. You know, I can't carry shopping bags. I walk with two sticks, so I rely heavily on internet commerce services. And then the final one I'm not patron of, but my aunt volunteers there, and my kids are particularly keen to work for this charity. It's called Horatio's Garden. They help people in spinal units get outside by building beautiful gardens.
Yes,
sorry,
I think
that was
actually
a bit long.
No, we've had Horatio's mum's been on the programme talking about Horatio's garden before, and very impactful the charity is too. So you're doing the first one, Snowdon, this weekend, and then the second one,
Scaffold Pike, a couple of weekends after that, which is the anniversary accident, and then Snowdon, I'm giving myself a bit of a gap. And I've got to that point now where I have this kind of low-level unease all the time, and I keep thinking, why am I feeling a little bit anxious? And I think it's probably that. And everyone keeps saying,
it might be.
Yes, it might be. And also everyone keeps saying to me, oh, well, you know, it is much tougher than you think, these climbs. I'm like, this isn't helpful at this point.
Is there a point? I mean, is Snowdon the easiest?
Apparently. Have you done it, Jane?
No, I've often thought about it. Actually, listening to you talk about it makes me wonder why I haven't made an attempt.
Well, exactly.
I mean, it is fantastic.
Not too late, Jane.
It's so beautiful, that part of Wales.
Well, yes. I'll send you some pics.
Yes, I'd like.
I think you could entertain the notion of joining in the September one. That would be
Ben Nevis.
I'm not sure what Ben Nevis has done to deserve that, but yes,
Yeah.
Okay, well, think on that. We wanted to talk to you about lots of the other things that are in your life at the moment, if that's okay. You are currently Chancellor of the Open University, President of the British Chambers of Commerce. You're a director on Twitter before Elon Musk took it all for himself. Yep. And as you've mentioned, one of the UK's tech pioneers. I feel like this is your life. I feel like someone's going to walk in with a big red book.
Brilliant, I get Kate.
Yeah. I think we should definitely tap into your tech expertise. When you first became digital champion back in 2009, I know that you wanted to make the point that there was a lot of enthusiasm back then from the government to better understand the digital world. But much further down the line, I know that you're also quite critical of the people who are in government who don't understand the digital world. So where does that leave all of us? What should we all be thinking? I mean, are we basically just not being led by the right people with the right expertise at the moment?
Well, I think it's slightly, I frame it slightly differently. So I think the first thing that infuriates me is that we still have, by some counts, 10 million adults who are unable to perform 5 or 6 basic tasks online. Can you imagine that right now in your life? Most jobs, I think it's 99% of jobs, are only advertised online, sorry, and yet there are 1 million unemployed people who have no digital skills. I mean, that just strikes me as so
can you
dumb.
Identify a digital skill? What are we talking about?
I mean,
about?
Being able to search for something effectively, okay, or being able to fill in a form online, or being
pay
able to
bill.
Buy something, exactly,
yeah.
Pay a bill, set up a direct debit, whatever it might be. I mean, a lot of these people probably don't have bank accounts, but I just feel as though it's so short-sighted the way that politicians frame digital technology. It's always about the shiniest thing in the room. And, you know, I've been that shiny thing for a brief period of my life. But that is not where we're going to get the big rewards, in my opinion. We're going to get the big rewards by making sure everybody has an access to and a basic understanding of technology. So that's a big issue, and one that we could so easily solve if somebody just prioritised it and put attention on it.
But do you think it's too late for someone to bother to do that because the shiny baubles are now so shiny?
No, I don't actually. I think that if we're thinking about, you know, pick, delete as appropriate, levelling up, or a country that works for everyone, or taking back control, this is just a policy plank that people need to work into it. And there was a push around this in 2009, to kind of, even under David Cameron, and then it sort of faded away over the last decade. And I really hope if there's a change of government, whatever shade of an election, they might reimagine how tech policy looks.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear that, because certainly Jeremy Hunt has made it quite a plank of all of his budget announcements, his policies as Chancellor, to really sell this country as being a home for digital entrepreneurship,
yes,
and a real, you know, healthy digital sector. But you still believe that there's an underbelly,
yeah,
that is completely ignored.
Absolutely. And that's great. But that's only a very small fraction of the picture, right? That's about building new businesses and innovation, all the things that we should be doing. But I'm talking about the more fundamental building blocks of what makes a modern Britain, one of which is great digital infrastructure and skills. And we don't have either.
Yeah. In your role at the British Chamber of Commerce, what is it that you believe most of your members really need to see from the next government, whatever shade it is?
We've just done some pieces of work around the future of the economy for exactly this purpose. So our Director General, Siobhan, talks about a playbook for an incoming government. And there's 5 planks to this work. The first is the transition to net zero. What do businesses need to be able to effectively decarbonise the economy? The second one is around people and skills. I think the thing that surprised me most travelling around from Preston to Poole to Edinburgh via Coventry, Doncaster, you know, I'm used to tech always having a skills shortage of people because there's always stuff being invented that people don't understand. But every single sector that I have met or talked to, from manufacturing to hospitality to anything in between, has said we can't find the people we need, retain them, retrain them. So this is a massive issue. The third piece is around global Britain, how we get more inward investment and also how we export more. 10% of British businesses export, 63% of British Chambers members businesses export. So even if you could double that 10% number, we all benefit massively to GDP. So that's a huge piece of it. The next one is around digitisation, obviously, and some things we've talked about. And the final bit is about how to build strength of local place. So those are kind of some of the issues that we're always talking to governments about.
I know that the online safety bill will have taken up some of your time in the House of Lords as it made its way through that and then back to the House of Commons. Do you think it's robust enough? Is it the best piece of legislation to protect particularly our children?
I was not closely involved, actually, and so all hat tips to people in the Lords that were, particularly Lord Clement Jones was incredibly influential and worked very hard on this. Beben Kidron, the campaigner, worked a lot on the children's part. But I think your question is right. It started, as I understand it, as a piece of online safety legislation for children, and it escalated and grew, and not just because of amendments, but because of just the process and the time of the legislation passing from idea to pre-legislation scrutiny and post-legislative scrutiny. So it has grown and morphed and become so much bigger than just about children. And I can't answer that question. I mean, I think talk to Ofcom, they'll say, yes, you know, it's going to be effective. We've got more tools, we've got more people, we can do more. But I think we have to also be realistic about where we're at and where the power sits in some of this stuff.
And the power is such an interesting point, isn't it? The Children's Commissioner, Rachel D'Souza, told us that she very much felt that her job and her role would only be validated when she saw a head honcho from a tech company jailed for not doing the right thing on their own platform, which we found quite surprising. Actually, but would you agree with that?
I think lots of people have said that. You know, I'm not a big fan of putting people in prison, so I'm not sure I picked that. But I think effective accountability and legislation, and therefore follow through with that, is essential. And I think that we have 100% kind of sleptwalked into where we're at now with the technology platforms, the power around us, and we should definitely be very worried about the impact that it's having on our daily lives.
Hardest question, last. How much time do you allow your seven-year-old boys to spend on screens, and do they have access to smart things?
No. And I was recently asked on a competing radio programme to say whether
that
I
very
thought...
day.
I know, to whether eight-year-olds should have smartphones. I thought, who is arguing that this is a good idea? I feel like some of us have taken leave of our senses. No, they don't have access to a smartphone or a device. They're allowed an hour at the weekends to build stuff on a hotel app they're obsessed with, which makes me laugh because I've always wanted to own a hotel. And I don't know when they'll have a smartphone, and I definitely would not give a child of under 13 or probably 14 a smartphone. Full stop. That's it.
Can you answer this one in about 10 seconds?
Yes.
If you had had access to smartphones and technology when you were a teenager, do you think you would have gone on to achieve what you've achieved?
That's a really interesting question. I feel like everything in my life has been such luck. I have absolutely no idea. I think I'd have got sucked into the rabbit hole of watching Sid Cherise videos.
Okay. Well,
that's a good answer.
That was Martha Lane Fox, and you can do a Google search on her expedition to raise money for those three charities if you just pop her name into any well-known search engine. And we'll put it in the description too. Eve, you're an absolute star. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Eve. Thank you for listening. And if you've ever polished a male Morris dancer's bells, we do want to hear about it.
Just no pictures.
Jada Fee at times.radio. Thank you.
Well done for getting to the end of another episode of Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Our Times radio producer is Rosie Cutler, and the podcast executive producer is Henry Tribe.
And don't forget, there is even more of us every afternoon on Times Radio. It's Monday to Thursday, 3 till 5. You can pop us on when you're pottering around the house or heading out in the car on the school run.
Or running a bank. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you can join us again on Off Air very soon.
Don't be so silly. Running a bank.
I know, ladies.
A lady listener.
I'm sorry.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.